Stan Goff began his military career in Vietnam as a grunt with the 173rd Airborne Brigade. He went to Guatemala, El Salvador, Grenada, Panama, Venezuela, Honduras, South Korea, Colombia, Peru, Somalia, with special operations units before participating in the 1994 invasion of Haiti. So obviously, this man knows a lot about the United States military and what it's doing in all parts of the world. He worked in infantry, ranger, special forces, and counter-terrorist units, as well as taught at the Jungle Operations Training Center at West Point. Today, Stan is a writer in Raleigh, North Carolina, and a granddad. So we're homeboys. Two of his children have joined the military, and one has been to Iraq. He is a member of Vietnam Veterans Against the War, Veterans for Peace, and Military Families Speak Out. He says he has watermelon politics, green, red, and pink, with seeds that are black. There are elements of socialism, ecology, feminism, and revolutionary black nationalism in his writing. And this is a quote from Stan. There is a seamless connection between 2 million mostly brown prisoners in the U.S., Abu Ghraib, and Fallujah. Rape culture, political acclimation, and the destruction of our biosphere. When we learn that, we will quit asking the powerful to give us these things and that thing, and we will force them to surrender their power. Ladies and gentlemen, Stan Goff.
All those things you talked about, granddad's my favorite one of those. And my grandson's second birthday is on Friday, this coming Friday. And I don't see my grandson wearing body armor. And I don't want to see them sent to kill somebody that looks just like that in another country. I want to thank the organizers of this very important defibrillation of the anti-war and anti-empire work that was put on hold by the recent elections. I want to thank my fellow speakers and presenters, and I want to thank everyone who's here for your tireless and stubborn refusal to confuse setbacks with defeats. I tend to think of resistance politics these days as if they were a Charles Dickens novels, and anybody who knows Charles Dickens knows that there's always a happy ending in the last chapter, but every chapter leading up to the last chapter is sad. And I'm extremely honored to be here today with Christian Parenti, whose book, Lockdown America, I consider canonical in many ways and which should be required reading prior to entrance into any university. I quoted Mr. Parenti extensively in a long analytical piece I did from the wilderness that attempts to show how utterly connected the incarceration industry in the United States is with the entire system of late imperialism, and in particular, why these most direct and brutal forms of social control, including prison rape and sexual humiliation, which are secretly sanctioned by the state, draw a straight line from a place like Pelican Bay Maximum Security Lockup to Abu Ghraib in Baghdad. There's another book that I want to recommend, and it's not about Kabul or Baghdad, but about Southern California. It's written by radical urban theorist Mike Davis, and it's entitled Ecology of Fear. And in it, Davis describes, among many other things, how the development of high-end residential housing enclaves in the suburban foothills of LA spread into the habitats of mountain lions. Now, from time to time, explains Davis, a mountain lion, described as a rogue, of course, eats Fluffy the Cocker Spaniel, or encounters and attacks one of the yuppie joggers, demonstrating how the feline diet can be diversified to include spandex. And this is interesting to me because these encounters are referred to by the press and by the members of those communities as a mountain lion problem. Now, obviously, the mountain lions are not getting equal time on the nightly news at these young Republican settlements, or the mountain lions might explain that they were there first, and from where they stand, they have a people problem. But the mountain lions don't have equal time. And this phrase, mountain lion problem, this phrase and this concept stick because it's repeated over and over again until it is incorporated effortlessly into casual conversation and folded into descriptive lists until it becomes a single signifier. There's no longer a problem between people and mountain lions. The mountain lions are the problem. This is how the standpoint of selfish, clueless yuppies is enshrined as an axiomatic premise that is out of reach of any critique, because we simply breathe that premise like the air, and like the air, we take it for granted. This is one reason why we are important to the movement, not just against the war, but the movement to overthrow a system that breeds war. This is why veterans and military families and dissident soldiers are so important in this crucial period, because in this period, when the old tricks no longer work and the depredations of this global system have once again consumed the very material bases of that system, its subordinated people and its wrecked environment, the essence of that system, its true essence, the gun and the bomb and the rape and the prison, are being unmasked by the necessity to use these colonizers' tools openly to preserve the colonizers' power. George Bush did not start this war. This war was waiting at the end of a road that we stepped onto decades ago. And by continuing to walk down that road, we have inevitably encountered what is at its end. How many Iraqis did Bill Clinton kill? Why did we not want to hear during this last electoral folly that the anti-Bush candidate selected for us by Wall Street and the Democratic Leadership Council did not promise to end the war, but to expand it? The communities of the military are in a unique position. They have a special standpoint to say, we were there. We were not on CNN, we were not in the New York Times, we were there when you rained dioxin on us 35 years ago as you killed 2-3 million Southeast Asians. We were there in our family hothouses as the families when we carried the dioxin and the death back into our living rooms, in our relationships, into our children who were the hostages of our pathologies. We weren't in the swimming pool communities in the LA foothills. We're the mountain lions, and now you have a veteran problem. And now you have a military family problem. And now you have an I'm awake and I'm pissed off soldier problem. Only we're not mountain lions, and we're not consigned by our own natural limitations to helplessly watch our own destruction by this system. We were there. We are there. We have a special capacity and a special pedagogical responsibility to stop others from taking the air for granted, because that air is contaminated. It's poisoned by the criminality at the very genetic core of this whole system that needs Agent Orange and depleted uranium to enforce its will on those it would dominate and those who refuse to surrender their own humanity to this criminality. Who we call statesmen are often as not thieves. Who we call statesmen are often as not vandals. And who we call statesmen are often as not mass murderers. And who better to out them for what they are than those of us who have been held closest to their criminal hearts in their time of need? Our demands have a special force, and so we have, in these military communities, a special responsibility. The movement demanded that we not invade Afghanistan to kill 4,000 civilians as vengeance for the 2,800 killed on September 11th. The movement demanded that we not invade Iraq, where our government's already overseen the destruction of over 1 million human beings, half of them not having reached the age of majority, and Iraq has never been any kind of threat to the people of the United States, ever. Veterans for Peace and military families speak out, held out in the face of faint-hearted anti-Bush resistance, and never listened to the siren call of compromise and chauvinism that led many of our allies to tell us to drop the word now from our campaign to bring them home now. We were clear about the system, and we knew that the vandal that destroys your home is not the right person to decide who and how it will get rebuilt. We stuck to our demand, and time is proving us grimly correct. We were correct to demand that this criminal class cease and desist. And now the elections that put a mask of legitimacy on this system are passed, and we have to reiterate that demand. Now, we all know that demands are the glue that hold movements together, whether or not the powerful meet them. One of our pedagogical tasks in the next period, I think, is to educate the public about the difference between a demand and an assertive request. I already have my post-election bumper stickers, you know, impeach Bush, and I know that these little provocations, because that bumper sticker is intended to be provocative, are useful mostly to further polarize our society, which I think is a good thing, because as long as we stay polite with one another, we never seem to get to the point. And impeach sounds good, and I'm going to leave the bumper sticker on there, but a Congress of the criminal class is not going to impeach a fellow criminal unless a scandal is so out of control that it threatens the whole structure. Now, one thing I agree with Christian Parenti on is that I oppose the criminal justice system as it is, but I think we'll need prisons for a long time. And I say that because while my bumper sticker says impeach, what I really want to see for these people who are presiding over yet another generation of our kids being sent abroad to do their criminal wet work, what I really want to see is George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin and Condoleezza, I forgot who I am, Paul Wolfowitz, all the cabinet members, old and new, I want to see them slammed up against the wall, searched as roughly as an Iraqi detainee, put in handcuffs, and their sorry asses thrown into a cell in Guantanamo Bay. Now, first we'll give Guantanamo back to Cuba where it belongs. Our job is not to be conciliatory. We are not diplomats. Our job is not to comfort the comfortable by reinforcing their denial. Our job is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And that's our job because we were there. We know what these people have sent our children to do. We know what these people have sent our children to become. And I'm not whining about that. I'm not going to cry about what was done to me, you know, because the upside to it is that I'm grateful to the dominant class for my military career. I'm grateful to them. I'm grateful for my education. I'm grateful to be a soldier. I'm just not their soldier anymore. On my 19th birthday, I left McCord Air Force Base up in Washington to begin my international studies program in northern Bin Bin province. My professors were a black buck sergeant named Eves, a professional con man named Westmoreland, and the courageous and patriotic soldiers of the NLF and NVA who taught me what it looks like to say no. I learned that a person can put one foot in front of another for a very long time. I learned that clouds of mosquitoes and thirst and sleeping in the mud won't kill you. I learned to accept my own mortality. I learned that what most of suburban America thinks is extreme and exceptional hardship is the daily reality of most of the world, and I began the process of learning that the comfort of those suburbs comes at a price, often paid by those we never see and whose hardship we can never comprehend. Now, what the Bushes and Rumsfelds have failed to understand about soldiers, old soldiers and now new soldiers, and the families of soldiers who learn these things from us and with us is that when we learn that there are different experiences in the world, and when we learn to keep putting one foot in front of the other, and when we learn that we can survive extreme hardship, and when we learn to accept our own mortality, and when we learn to recognize con men, and when and if we finally learn that everything they say is a lie and every mission is vandalism and murder, then what is left behind is still a soldier, but he or she is not their soldier anymore. Those troops are our armed forces, and we have to reclaim them no matter the cost. Movements start with those who are not afraid, and they grow with those who are only a little afraid. The veteran just back from Iraq and the veterans of past conflicts who have snatched their humanity back from the system are not going to fall for every bullshit story. We're not going to fall for their appeals to criminality cloaked in patriotism. We're not going to be intimidated by the with us or with the terrorist rhetoric. And I hope they're listening. I hope you're listening, George and Don and all the rest of you. I expect you are. You know, George and Dick and Don. You're not going to shut these veterans up and these families, and you're not going to shut these soldiers up by shaking your little Patriot Act in our faces. Because some of us worked pretty hard and risked everything to fight for your lives. Don't you know that we'll fight harder for those children just like that back there? We'll fight harder against you now that we know the truth. See? Woo! They're turning us into soldiers, and they don't know who they're screwing with anymore. These troops are our armed forces. They're not their armed forces. They're our armed forces. And we've got to reclaim them no matter the cost. Patriot Act. We're the ones who have the responsibility to teach the rest that patriotism of someone defending their home is not the same as the patriotism deployed to take our children away from their home. The patriotism of the invader is not the same as the patriotism of the invaded. We can teach them that because we went then and we're going to witness now. They hate witnesses, don't they? They hate witnesses the way that all criminals hate witnesses. And I've got something to say to the soldiers and veterans who aren't with us yet, and who are wandering around in the wilderness at post-combat shock. Witnessing will heal you. PTSD is not the outcome of violence. PTSD is a recognition that you've been betrayed and that you are helpless when it happens. Because you couldn't do it any better, or because you didn't know any better. You were helpless when it happened. Does anyone here know what the most common cause of PTSD in the United States is? Rape. Rape. Rape victims report that confronting their attackers, and not just in the court where the system tries to rape them again, but confronting one's attacker with a support group and outing the attacker are highly therapeutic. It's a way to recapture that lost agency from a former state of helplessness and standing back up in the world. For combat veterans, we have a group right here for you, and we will stand beside you when you out the authors of the crime by describing what it really looked like. We know that some of you cling to denial, that some of you are broken in body and spirit, that some of you rage, and that some of you turn your anger in on yourselves and crawl into a needle or a bottle or the chamber of a pistol. But there's a way out of that wilderness, and the path out is the path of the witness. Imperialism has staked a claim on our children in uniform, and that's why we will never relinquish our claim on them. We will never surrender in the struggle for the souls of this and future generations. Never. Those troops are our armed forces. They're not their armed forces. And we have to reclaim them no matter the cost. I said I was a grandfather, didn't I? Those of you who are grandparents know what I mean when I say, Dick Cheney, don't put yourself between me and my grandbaby. And expect me to retreat. You know? We're not going anywhere. In fact, we're not only not going anywhere, we're going to come after you. The veterans of this war, some of them still on active duty, are already organizing against it. Against the troops in Iraq write to us. The whistleblowers are emerging from within the service. The refusers are emerging from within the service. The MFSO family list is growing. The number of conscientious objectors is growing. The mutinies have already begun. We're going to court with stop lawsuits and defend military refugees in Canada, and soldiers in theater are setting up blogs to bypass the comm censors. There's a Camilo Mejia or a Mike Hoffman or a Kelly Doherty in every squad in the military waiting for us to help them into the light. George Bush, we're going to fight you for every single last one of them. For those troops who aren't ready yet, we'll be there when you are. We don't go away. We put one foot in front of the other, and we're never going to stop. When you decide that it's time to see what's on the other side of all taboos, you'll find us there. The veterans will be there, and families will be there. Now, I made that Dantean journey that you're on right now for 2 decades, separated from the very people who wanted most to confirm my humanity, and it was the humanity that I thought that I'd abandoned along the road through 8 conflict areas as a servant of this Ivy League mafia. But when I made the leap, these veterans and these families, they were there to catch me, and they catch me now when I fall. This movement is your family, and that door to that home always remains open. And if we're not home, look for us in the street, because that's where we're headed now. One foot in front of the other until we get where we gotta go, because those troops are our armed forces and we have to reclaim them no matter the cost. And I think it's important to say this. Those troops in Iraq are not our enemies, and they have to reclaim their children no matter the cost. So those families in Iraq and these families here, we're reclaiming our children from the same criminal clique. So who is the enemy now? You know, that's where we're headed now. We're going to do it with the 3D system of organizing. We're going to delegitimize, we're going to disobey, and we're going to disrupt. We're going to delegitimate this war, and we're going to delegitimate this system. If that's not enough, we're going to disobey them. And if disobedience is not enough, we're going to disrupt the system. We slept in the mud, we did the dirty work. We brought the wars back into our homes to be the burdens of our families, and they made us soldiers, so now that's what we're going to do. We're going to act like soldiers. We're not afraid of poverty. We're not afraid of prison. We're not afraid of death, so now what are you going to do? Without our fear, they have no power. And in movements, those who are not afraid will show those who are a little afraid the way. And we're not making a request. We know the difference between an assertive request and a demand. We're making a demand. Bring them home now. Let the Iraqis be the architects of their own future. And it could be grim. If there's a civil war in Iraq, there's a civil war in Iraq. We had the bloodiest war in human history as a civil war right here in this country to settle accounts that had to be settled one way or another. If that's what's got to happen, that's what's got to happen. This is not wine. It's not proven with age. We need to get out of there. The Iraqis have 5,000 more years experience with civilization than we do. They can figure it out without us there. If you want to compromise, you go turn on Judge Judy. And if you want to retreat, go book a cabana in Hawaii. And if you want to surrender, you go to Appomattox and read the plaques, because we ain't going anywhere. Thank you.